flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Welcome out and back into Sports Talk here in the Convention Center for Radio Row action, getting ready for Super Bowl 59. Steve Geller, Mike Dettillier, Bobby Hebert. Bring you until 8 p.m. this evening. This hour we're going to be talking to Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, joining us after the first break. 6 o'clock hour, Daryl Johnson, UFL Executive Vice President, will be on the scene. And then in the 7 o'clock hour, talk a little Kansas City Chiefs with Dan Israel, Executive Producer and host on the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network. Guys, definitely the countdown has been on, and we can feel like the momentum building up this week. I don't think the big crowd of media has yet arrived, but I'm pretty sure Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, that's really Wednesday, Thursday. I'd say for sure by Thursday, if not tomorrow. Yeah, that routine hasn't changed because you know why? A lot of the organizations don't want to pay for extra hotel nights and stuff.
Everybody's on a
budget. So yeah, you could still experience the Super Bowl and. I'd say more Thursday than Wednesday. I'd say more. It might come Wednesday night, Steve, and do like the Thursday, Friday shows here.
The other thing,
on Radio
too,
World.
Is the fan experience.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Because you know that, I know for your son, he wants to come see it, but that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, oh my God, they got people for that.
Yeah, that's like a long weekend, like a holiday weekend, you know, you're stretching it out Thursday to Sunday, without a doubt.
So for both of you guys, how many Super Bowls covering, do you know offhand, is this for you?
I mean, covering or going
like,
to?
Like getting to cover in New Orleans.
Well, the first couple we couldn't because we were probably in school.
What do you mean? Like as far as in the media?
I guess even if you were a kid and you got to go to one.
Oh, yeah.
Since 1970.
This is my seventh one.
Okay.
I've actually been able to attend going back to Tulane Stadium, the Chiefs Vikings, and then I appreciated more and they got waxed. The next year they went undefeated. I even had a white handkerchief. You know, they got the terrible towel, the Steelers, they wave. Well, the Dolphins fans in 1972-71 season, they had these, you know, you blow your snot, blow your nose like a white handkerchief, and you put in your back pocket like your grandpa and your dad.
Yeah.
So they turned that into that instead
it
of a terrible
the
towel.
Terrible towel version of Miami.
Yeah, so they had a white handkerchief, and you're waving the white handkerchief, and
they didn't have to wave it much.
They got skunked by the cowgirls.
Say, it's almost like the white flag, you're surrendering.
They got skunked by the cowgirls 24-3, but the next year they went undefeated. I think it might have been in L.A. Then they beat the Redskins 14-7, Billy Kilmer. But you know what I remember about
that? And the only reason they scored, Garo. Remember he tried to throw a pass
Garo, the kicker for the Dolphins.
Yeah, Mike Bass.
Yeah, that's one of the bloopers.
Yeah.
When you look at NFL or football bloopers. But, yeah, you know what I remember now? You look at the security and how the world changed, especially the 21st century, you know, post 9/11, that I can remember in Tulane Stadium, and I'm all excited because you could go right by the players. They're coming out the locker room. I'm patting on the shoulder pads like Larry Zonka and Bob Greasy. Like, you remember, like Mercury Morris, the running back, Larry Zonka. Oh, there's Paul Warfield. And I'm like a little kid. I'm patting them all on the shoulder pads. No, you couldn't get near them.
No.
But it was unbelievable. And that how close you're able to get to the players. So that was that one, the Super Bowl. So actually I went to 2 out of 3 Super Bowls in Tulane Stadium. The third one I had tickets, and I told you I framed that ticket.
That's right, yeah.
Because they had that chemical spill. Then I went to, you remember, the Orange Crush, Denver Broncos against the Cowgirls.
That was the first one in the Dome.
Yeah, the first one in the Dome went that. And then the Eagles, when they lost to the Raiders and Jim Plunkett. You know that one? And
they got their nose rubbed in it, Steve. I hate to tell you, but it happened.
Yeah, and so the couple of ones.
1980, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened in 81, actually,
yeah, okay.
Because it was like a couple days after the hostages from Iran were released, and they had the yellow ribbon tied around the
Door. Yeah, yeah. And then it wasn't just in New Orleans, though. I was able to go. You know, I didn't go to the Super Bowl. Remember, we did shows all week in Miami when the Saints played the Colts.
You came back.
We came back, did a pep rally in Slidell.
I remember that, right.
At the convention center or something. And, you know, we watched it in the studio. Then we walked to Deanie's. And, boy, that's when people were shooting bottle rockets everywhere.
Did you get to go to the Lights Out game or no? Just doing coverage of that.
No, I didn't go to that one.
That one I didn't go to either.
No, I didn't go to that one. I went the first time. I was a good luck charm. The first time the Falcons ever went to the Super Bowl was doing the radio, doing the pre-post game in Miami. When they lost to Terrell Davis and John Elway, they got spanked.
Right.
That's remember Eugene Robinson.
Oh, he got
He won the Bart Starr Award the night before, which is a good Christian award. Then he's out there looking for hoes on he's like on the wrong street. Like my brother was living in Miami then, and then all of a sudden he gets arrested, and we have to cover all this, and the team's up all night.
Yeah,
because Eugene Robinson, you know, looked very hypocritical. It's like all of a sudden he's trying to solicit something he should have been soliciting. And then he gets busted. And he just won an award. I mean, come on.
Okay.
So we're dealing with that, and then. And then this is the last one that in Atlanta, I'll never forget because my dad took me to the Super Bowl and said, well, shoot, I got to take my sons. So if I don't take Bo and T-Bob, they're going to give me a bunch of crap. The rest of my life, I don't take them to the Super Bowl. So before Arthur Blank on the team, Rankin Smith's son, Taylor Smith, owned the Falcons. I said, Taylor, I got to take my boys to the Super Bowl. So I took them. This Super Bowl was unbelievable. In the Georgia Dome, that's when the Rams beat the Titans. Remember, all of a sudden he tackled and he couldn't get an end zone.
The final seconds, 1 yard.
Right, and I remember T-Bob was for the Rams and Bo was for the Titans. Had to sit in between them because they were fighting. And they were, okay, I'll come down. So, and I remember I did have to pay face value for that ticket, and it was like $900-something a ticket.
Oh, Lord.
And then that was like 25 years ago?
Yeah.
So what is it? Thousands now?
Inflation now.
Yeah, a little inflation. And then I got that one Super Bowl ticket that I never used because the chemical spill. That was the Steelers Vikings. And that that face value, north end zone, on the lower deck, like $16. So
whoa.
How times have changed.
Times, and listen, that was the last one in Tulane Stadium.
Right.
But Terry Bradshaw, I'll tell you, because we've done a few functions, and he was like, you know what made that special? Not only was it my first, Art Rooney.
Oh, wow.
In his 80s. First time he had ever won anything, any That's championship awesome. At any level. And they had to pick him up and put him on a makeshift stage so he could grab the Lombardi
trophy. Oh, that's why Jerry Jones, by the time they go back to the Super Bowl, they might have to lift him up on the stage. Or it might not even happen.
I don't know. It might not anything.
It might not even happen. So, Steve, as we go into the break.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up, because you grew up like your Eagles fan.
Right.
So is this your first Super Bowl?
This is my first Super Bowl. Got to get to go to. Got to cover the
To go to. I'm in attendance.
Go to. Definitely. First one.
So you got your cake and eat it, too.
It's kismet.
Yeah. So you got your cake and eat it, too. That's awesome.
You might give them bad luck in the Chiefs win, but you get to see three in a row. You'll get to see the three-peat.
Yeah. So I'm going to see how tense Steve is when I'm sitting by. See.
I might have some... drink something to help me out that night.
No, I might encourage him like a ton of the Eagles fans, like E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles.
I got that on tape.
We are heading to break here at the Memorial Convention Center. When we get back, we'll be talking to Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Team WWL here at the Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row in the Memorial Convention Center. We're celebrating the big game powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso. Visiting with Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL insider in the Treasure Chest Casino Power Seat. Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May yo game day be delicious. Mark, how's it going, man? You ready for the big game Sunday?
Yeah, I'm not going to be doing anything but watching. So I am as ready as I could be. Like, there ain't no pressure. It's whatever is going to happen is going to happen. And I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it.
Now, Stink, it's not a trick question. I just want your opinion on this. But I thought I was reading this article. It's kind of interesting to me because you were part of this. Like, Super Bowl teams since unrestricted free agency came into the NFL in 1983. So when you look at, like, significant impacts as far as free agents to help their team, their prospective teams win the Super Bowl, obviously we look at Saquon Barkley, what he's done for the Eagles this year. But the question I have for you, who would you put number one on that list? Okay, you look at Reggie White. We all know he went from the Eagles to the Packers. Deion Sanders, actually, a couple of different teams. 49ers and Dallas. Look at Charles Woodson. He ended up going to the Packers when he left Oakland. Peyton Manning, we all know what he did with the Colts and went to the Broncos. Then Tom Brady with the Buccaneers. That's a pretty good fraternity. But who you think had the biggest impact when you look at when they left their team and then went to another team that obviously was a Super Bowl winner?
They left one out. Drew Brees.
Oh, yeah, Drew. And I forgot, yeah, Drew Brees. Yeah, how can I forget Drew Brees? Yeah.
Yeah, Drew Brees. I probably put Tom Brady at the top of that list. Obviously, that Tampa Bay Buccaneers team was an 8-8 team every year with Jameis Winston. You know, the year I think he leaves, he's got, he's got 30 total picks, 30 total touchdowns. Like, it was ridiculous. 39 total turnovers, I believe, between 30 picks and 9 different fumbles. And, you know, absolutely insane. He starts his career, his first career pass with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is a pick six. His last career pass with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is a pick six. Tom Brady comes in there, completely, like, utterly changes the culture. And in that first year, they win a world championship. So that would be my number one. My number two would be Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley, what he has done. And you know what is interesting for me? It's not just the yardage, and it's not just what he done running the football and all that stuff. It's the off the ball stuff he does. His blitz pickup game in the NFC Championship, man, it was exquisite. 4th-and-5, picks up a blitz. You know, some would say, hey, it was holding, whatever, it didn't get called, but puts his nose in there, picks up that blitz. They get a 1st-down on a 4th-and-5, pass to A.J. Brown down the sideline. 3rd-and-6 later in the game on a touchdown drive. He picks up a blitz, a big-time blitz, stands up, just absolutely lambastes the linebacker. Jalen Hurts throws it to Devontae Smith for a big first down. In the quarterback design quarterback run, the quarterback draw, he picks up the linebacker as a lead blocker. Jalen Hurts scrambles around the left side and scores a touchdown. And then I think the biggest thing, and every NFL locker room is like this, there's a couple of guys that are connective tissue within an NFL locker room. They just are. They connect the football team together. And I think one of the cool things is, you know, he's out of the game in the NFC Championship game against Washington. Shipley comes in, his backup, breaks one for about 70 yards, gets tackled. And the first guy down there off the sideline to celebrate with him, Saquon Barkley. There are certain guys that are connective tissue within a locker room. They just connect the defense to the offense, the special teams to the offense, to the defense. They're just guys that bring everybody together. And I feel like Saquon is that guy in Philadelphia.
You know, Stink, and obviously looking in the trenches of, and I think this could come about because, you know, we're going to follow the football, but then if you truly, know football and you're observing, I'm thinking this game, well, it's going to be a challenge in the interior offensive linemen, so good against good, but which team can better protect the interior against a fierce pass rush right at the point of attack? You look at the Eagles, led by Jalen Carter, and they look at, I'm a pro football-focused fan, but Jalen Carter and his teammates accounted for 3 of the top 8 interior pass rushes in the league this season. And then you look at Chris Jones, he got the highest overall grade for interior defenders in 24 and ranked as the best pass rusher. So, but then you look at the competition, and the offensive line, they're pretty stout. I'm going to be intrigued who wins those battles because it could be a push, but that could dictate the outcome of a game. especially if you don't avoid the sack or a particular throw you might have to make to be clutch.
The thing with the Chiefs is their reshuffling of that offensive line. Steve,
yeah.
You could talk a lot about it, but you got Tony out of position now. That's not his natural spot to be playing on the outside at tackle.
Left tackle, yeah.
And so, that causes some mismatches inside for the Chiefs when they're going up against Davis and Carter.
Yeah, Thuney's been absolutely awesome moving out to the outside, and it's really helped solidify their offensive line. They've been a much better group since that's happened. I think the one guy that you worry about is a backup, Caliendo at the left guard position. So, that's going to be a big matchup, and one of the big matchups is how do you get one-on-ones? And it's interesting. I'm actually looking at Kansas City film right now and Kansas City defensive film against Buffalo, and the offensive line comes up and points out the protection. Okay, we're turning, we're sliding to the left, right? We're sliding to the linebacker on the left. It's Bolton. And it really smart, and this is what smart coordinators do. So you know you're getting a slide that way, right? So what do? They walk up that linebacker who the offensive line just pointed out over the center. What does that mean? Well, now that means you've got to go one-on-one. You got to make a Mingo call. We're all man. And they did it. They slid, and you know you're sliding toward 95, toward the major Chris Jones, the major threat as a defensive lineman. So they walk the linebacker up that they plan on sliding to, create a one-on-one situation, and then Chris Jones beats the snot out of the left guard who was expecting to get some double-team help on their way to picking up the linebacker. And that's coaching, like understanding. Hey, guys, we know they're either gonna flipper the protection. They're gonna go toward Chris Jones. They're always gonna try to get Chris Jones a one on one. And how do we do it? Well, if they designate the protections early, we're gonna walk up linebackers, make them go man, and see if we can get that one on one pass rush on a guard. And it's brilliant coaching. It's simple, and oftentimes brilliance comes in simplicity. It's very simple, and they understand by moving him around where those slides are going and how to create one-on-ones, and that's something they do as well, if not better, than anybody in football.
Insider Call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season.
Now, Sting, you talked about coaching, and I'm sure you're familiar. I probably have a personal relationship with both these guys because of their experience. Kansas City's Andy Heck is in his, 12th season with the team, 21st as an NFL coach. Then you look at Eagles, Jeff Stoutland is also in his 12th season with the team, but spanning three head coaches, 41st year of coaching. Well, that's a lot of skins on the wall right there. And, that's why you look at both offensive lines and what they've been able to accomplish. That's why I think you say coaching does come into play.
Yeah, there's no question. And for me, Stoutland's the best offensive line coach in football. And, you go back to last week or the NFC Championship game. So their center comes up with a back injury, back spasms, or whatever it is before the game. They decide to dress him, but they don't play him. That's Cam Jurgens. They take their all-pro left guard, slide him to center, and they move in some guy I don't even know into left guard. And that left guard did not miss a beat. He was dispensing justice. He is so – I mean, like everybody across that line of scrimmage, they're so well coached. Hey, you look at Becton. Becton failed as a Jets first-round pick. He just couldn't play. Comes to Philadelphia, they move him from outside to inside. The guy's an all-star at the right guard position. Anyhow – Landon Dickerson moves into center, then he hurts his knee. Jurgens comes back in. Meanwhile, that left guard that I don't even know his name is a backup left guard, killed it against Washington, against those two inside guys who are damn good players in Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne. So Jeff Stoutland is considered as good as there is in the National Football League when it comes to, offensive line coaching. And Heck has had he's got an unbelievable career. Not only is a first-round offensive tackle in this league for many, many years, but now as a coach, as you mentioned, in his 21st season. So the guy is a damn good coach. Both these coaches are great. But, if I'm looking at who the strongest offensive line is, I mean, you've got, you know, Mailata at left tackle, who's an outstanding player. Landon Dickerson's all pro. Cam Jurgens is outstanding. As I mentioned, Becton is great. And Lane Johnson may be the best right tackle in football. They are incredibly well-coached, unbelievably athletic, and they're one of those teams that, like, they can get into anything you want to get into. You want to play the zone game? We'll kill you in the zone game. You want us to run the gap schemes? We'll kill you in the gap schemes. You want us to run power football? We can beat your butt in that. You want us to run some finesse, you know, pin and pull stuff? We've got the athleticism to do that stuff. You want us to pull our center and get outside on center counter? We can do that stuff. So they are probably the best offensive line in football, and they've got such versatility, and a lot of that comes, as you mentioned, with the great coaching that they get.
Go ahead. I wanted to think, and you know, you play in the line and how you were compensated. I thought this was interesting, that how you valued. Look at interior offensive linemen have become increasingly, obviously, more valuable. Look at, we all know left tackle, most quarterbacks are right-handed. Has always been a premium position. Then now even right tackle, because they have pass rushers who can even come into the face of the quarterback. But I thought this was interesting. Too bad you're not playing now. No, I'm just looking at 32 tackles right now have a contract at an annual average of $10 million or more a season. It's from over the cap. Then you look at the guards and the centers now. They're catching up, not so much in value, but there's at least 20 guards and 6 centers who have current deals with at least $10 million or more per year.
I know one of them, Creed.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, when you look at Creed Humphrey, the Chiefs lead, he's the highest paid center. Yep. So, Stink, maybe, man, just think if you all the years you played, then you'd be a lot richer if you were playing today.
Yeah. Hey, man, I started for 12 years, didn't make that combined in 12 years. I didn't. So, yeah, that's why I'm still doing radio, TV, and everything else I'm doing. So,
yeah, the same here.
But, hey, good for those guys. I'm glad they can get it. And, you know, the value of it is really interesting, too, because right tackles get paid now as well, because – with this passing game, as much open formations as we do, you know, we used to be so right-handed in the NFL. When I played, probably 80% of our formations were you know, right-handed formations. The tight ends were always attached, and now the tight ends are flexed outside the wide receivers, out in bunch formations. They're doing all kinds of things. It's different than, you know, when you and I played. And so now oftentimes you're playing with two open edges. And so right tackles in my day, right tackles was your bruiser. You know, right tackle was the guy that just beat people up. And in today's game, your right tackle's got to be athletic, because you're facing guys like Von Miller's made a living playing left defensive end or left edge rusher over the right tackle. That's where he's got the majority of his sacks all his years in Denver and all his years in, you know, his year in L.A. Yeah. And now in Buffalo. So, like, it's changed. It's not just the left tackle anymore. Now it's everybody, and the right tackle's also getting paid like Lane Johnson. So it's certainly that part of the game has changed to a certain degree.
Mark, one of the things, if you looked at it on paper and you see two rookies starting at cornerback, you say, hey, you know what? If I'm Pat Mahomes, I'm going to try to make some hay here. But you watch the play all season long, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean. Man, those guys didn't play like rookies. They really, really played well. And teams really didn't go after Quinyon much after the first couple games of the season. They kind of stayed away from him. That, to me, makes the Eagles really something, because of the fact that when you got guys like a Howie Roseman that can figure out those two guys are great fit on our team and they can start right away on that Eagles team, I'm wondering, though, in the back of Andy's mind to say, you know what, man, we got the best player in the game. I'm going after him. One of them.
Yeah.
I'm going to go after one of them.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the other thing is big play Slay. Darius Slay has been a big-time corner in this league for a long time, and he really becomes kind of their third corner. You know, Cooper DeJean is playing in the slot. Big play Slay's out on one side, and then you got Quinyon Mitchell, who's shutting it down on the other opposite side. You know, he's playing mostly into the boundary against X receivers and shutting those guys down. And so, like, it gives you a ton of flexibility. They got three legit big time cover corners, and when you've got that, man, you got something special where you can play that way. And so, you know, they're great. You know, the other thing that was really interesting to me, remember, You know, Vic Fangio was run out of Miami because, you know, he's old and he's a curmudgeon and he doesn't relate to today's younger player and this, that, and the other. And, oh, by the way, he goes to Philadelphia. He got number one rated defense in football, and they're playing a bunch of young guys who haven't played before, a bunch of rookies who are all pros or all rookies. He feels like he's relating to those guys pretty well. So maybe the Miami Dolphins are just softer than whale poop. Maybe it's the Dolphins. Maybe it's that all that, you know, palm trees and nice weather. Maybe they need to get some, you know, maybe they need some tough Philadelphia love because those guys failed. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, right now you're looking at Vic Fangio, is he's nominated for one of the assistant coaches of the year. So they're doing a phenomenal job in Philadelphia, no question about it.
Now, Stink, I want your take, because it looks like we have to wait till the Super Bowl is over, but Kellen Moore is going to be the Saints coach. You know, if you look at his background, you know, he played 6 years in the NFL, had an NFL career, but as a backup coming out of Boise State, and this was interesting. He became, I didn't realize this, he became the play caller for Dallas at just 29 years of age.
Yep.
Now,
yeah.
They were talking about young. So I was looking at that, and just looking in the quarterbacks, different personalities. He's coach, you know, Dak Prescott. And then you look Justin Herbert, and now with, you know, Jalen Hurts. So different type of quarterbacks. But if you look at it, he was more focused on passing the football. I guess you learn in different things depending on your personnel, what he did in Dallas and then what he did with the Chargers compared with the Eagles. Because the Eagles attempted the fewest passes in the league while having the most rushing attempts. Obviously, he knows the value of Saquon Barkley. But, you know, I like what Lane Johnson, you mentioned Lane Johnson. I like what Lane Johnson said. He said, I think Coach Moore is a great football mind. I think he's a football genius. Like, whoa, I hope he'd be a genius for the Saints. And his best days are ahead of him. So it seems like a lot of optimism for the 36-year-old if he's potentially going to be the Saints coach.
Yeah, you know what? He's had success. You know, his quarterback coach is a good buddy of mine, former, you know, Idaho Vandal, Doug Nussmeier, who's been with him everywhere he goes. And those two kind of see the game, you know, from like eyes. And ultimately, you know, you look at the success he's had everywhere he's gone, but this is the most he's ever leaned into the run game. And I think one of the things that's really interesting about this year with Saquon and then with Derrick Henry and with, Williams out there in L.A. and just all the running backs that had a ton of success with the run game this year, I think that run game is really part of it is that the guys are great players, right? But I think it's making a comeback because of the defensive adjustments that have been made. And the defensive adjustments that have been made is we're going to go small. We're playing nickel in base downs. We're playing with, you know, smaller linebackers that are 215 to 225 pounds, guys that can fly, guys that can run. And if people are going to play us in a bunch of shell coverage with two high safeties, man, we are going to learn and lean into running the football, and we're just going to mash guys. And I go back to my own career, man. Like Mike Shanahan, if you lined up in two high safeties, Mike Shanahan was offended, like absolutely offended. And he'd be like, if you think you're going to stop our offense with that garbage, we are going to cram it down your freaking throats. And I think what offensive coordinators are seeing now is all the value because of the matchups. Like, you've gotten so small as a defense and so speedy as a defense, man, we're going to make you stop your feet, you know, because your advantage is sideline to sideline, your ability to run. We're going to make you stop your feet, and we're going to come downhill, and we're going to smash you in the mouth. And I think you see that you see this evolution of offense, and obviously Kellen Moore has been part of that evolution.
Mark, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You got it. Take care, guys.
All right, Steve.
Thanks. Thank you.
That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider Call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We're at the Morial Convention Center on Radio Row, and the host committee is Media Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso. We just heard the Treasure Chest Casino Power Seat with Mark Schlereth, and be back with more of Sports Talk right after this on WWL. All right, folks, you ready for the big game weekend in NOLA? WWL's got your
your VIP tickets to three unforgettable events. It starts Friday, Shaq's Funhouse featuring John Summit, Ludacris, and DJ Diesel. Saturday, Sports Illustrated The Party brings the energy with Dom Dollar and Diplo. And Big Game Sunday, it's Guy Fieri's Flavortown Tailgate with 20-plus incredible food experiences, plus live performances by Diplo and Flavor Flav. The best part? You could win two VIP tickets to the ultimate Big Game Weekend. You can enter now at WWL.com/contest. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be right back with more right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk with the host committee's Media Center on Radio Row and the Morio Convention Center. Celebrating the Big Game Week, getting ready for Sunday. Eagles versus Chiefs. Chiefs, it's all powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. And man, oh man, we're getting closer and closer to the final game of the season now. And, you know, we get all excited for football. It comes and then...
Well, football ain't going nowhere. We're going to have more adventure.
But the games, but the games.
Yeah, the games go away. We still have plenty to talk about,
man,
I know.
We're going to have a more eventful offseason than in-season.
That's true.
I'm just telling you, Steve.
You know, Steve, I know you have to be a little nervous. We're going to be watching the game. And I know at the end, the Eagles better be up by two scores. Because I'm saying if they're not.
No two field goals.
You got to be like 9 points or more. You know, because 8 points, you can still, that's not up by two scores.
It's not an octopus,
there has to be 9 points or more, because this, to me, is unbelievable. Look, the Chiefs, you went to my pressure, have won an NFL record 17 consecutive games decided by one possession.
Mm.
Now, okay, now look at Mahomes. Mahomes has a winning record, obviously, to say the least. He has way more losses than I thought. I go, whoa. But this shows you nobody's even close to him. Do you know now 17 consecutive games decided by one possession? Mahomes has a winning record, 27 wins and 26 losses in games which his team has trailed in the fourth quarter. The next best quarterback with at least 25 starts in the league history, his winning percentage is only 38%. And Mahomes, that says all the quarterbacks in history. You know how to win in the fourth quarter to come back? That's what's so impressive. Usually you don't come back, but ain't Pat Mahomes.
Chiefs got that.
Ain't Pat Mahomes. Mm. Only one with a winning record in the history of the NFL trailing in the fourth. And he's 27 and 26. And to me, it's over 50%. So look at that.
Be back with more Sports Talk after this news update on WWL.